Have you prayed lately? Are you interested in prayer and what it's about? Well, welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The ability to mourn and grieve is one of the many things that distinguishes humans from other animals, as is the ability to pray or consciously not pray. When life is good, people often pray less than when times are tough, and tough times occasionally visit all of us, with or without prayer. Rabbi Naomi Levy is the author of To Begin Again, The Journey Toward Comfort, Strength, and Faith in Difficult Times. She's our guest today in this archive edition of Radio Curious. I spoke with Rabbi Naomi Levy from her home in Venice, California, in December of 1999, when this program was first broadcast. I asked her about prayer. What is prayer? How is it done? And what good does it do? Rabbi Naomi Levy, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us about prayer. What is prayer? For example, for people who have heard about it but don't really know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people generally think that prayer is something that's found in a book. And for some people, prayer works. And for other people, it doesn't seem to move them except when they're in a time of trouble. And then when they're in trouble, they generally feel that they don't know how to pray, so they'll turn to their rabbi or their priest or their minister and say, please pray for me.
But that seems like a big difference, one person praying versus asking another to pray for them.
Mm-hmm. But what I try to talk about in my book is that we all have the capacity to pray, and that prayer can take many forms, and sometimes we don't realize that spontaneous prayer is a beautiful way to pray, and that daily prayer is an important way to pray. And sometimes we forget that we think that prayer is some kind of form of magic. You know, I can put a prayer in here, and God will offer me the correct response that I'm asking for there. And if it doesn't work that way, then what's the point of prayer? And one of the things I try to get across to people is that prayer isn't some kind of magic, and that often when we think that way about prayer, we get frustrated and we get angry and we feel that we're just crying out to deaf ears. And one story I tell in my book is about a couple that desperately wanted to have a child. And the husband, whose name is Brad, he said to me, you know, I would come and I would pray, and I would pray what he would call his let's make a deal prayers. And I think we can all relate. I think sooner or later we all find ourselves making a let's make a deal prayer.
You mean if you do this, I'll do that?
Yeah, he would, you know, he would say, listen, God, if you give us a child, I will make a major donation to charity. If you give us a child, I'll do this and I'll do that. And week after week and month after month, he found that they were unable to conceive. And he found himself getting angrier and angrier at God. What's the point of praying if everything that I want, if the most important thing I want, you can't give me? And he said that he got to the point where he really didn't even want to pray anymore. And then one day, he woke up in the morning and he had an epiphany. And the epiphany was, it's time for us to adopt a child. And the answer that he got wasn't the conception of a child, but it was the turning point of his whole life. And he and his wife went on to adopt a beautiful baby girl. And he said to me recently that she's certainly the answer to their prayers, and he realized that God isn't some kind of Monty Hall up in the sky, and that prayer isn't about bargaining. It's about keeping our eyes open, because sometimes the answers to our prayers are right in front of us, but we can't see them, you know?
How do you connect that with spontaneous prayer or daily prayer?
Yeah, again, I think we have to be careful about thinking that prayer is a one-to-one relationship. In other words, I'll ask for this and I'll get this. Because sometimes what we receive is not necessarily what we've been asking for. But I connect it up with spontaneous prayer because, again, I think we have to remember that just a single word is a prayer. Anything that comes from our heart that we focus toward God is a prayer. And that we shouldn't limit prayer to the ones that are, you know, sort of in the canon. Although for some people, for many people, those prayers do work. For others, they need to supplement it with something more personal.
How about for people who are skeptics, when you say prayer comes from the heart, mm-hmm. that we focus towards God, people who are skeptics about the existence of God,
mm-hmm.
is there prayer for them?
I think that there are always prayers. Maybe they're not directed toward God. I think there are prayers that we direct toward ourselves, you know. May I be the best person possible today? May I remember to take nothing for granted today? May I treat people with respect and with kindness, even when I'm in a bad mood? You know, I think there are different kinds of prayers, you know. May I find a way to, you know, to give of myself and, you know, to realize all the potential that's inside of me. Where, you know, these are prayers, but maybe not prayers in the traditional mode of prayer.
So how does one pray? Or what are the many different ways of praying that you've experienced that our listeners might connect with?
One way to pray is if you feel you don't have the words, is to open up a prayer book and find something, even if it's just one sentence, that moves you. Another way to pray is to just open up your heart and let words come out and not worry about editing them or not worrying about whether they're beautifully crafted, but just to allow sort of the utterance of your soul to emerge. And I often encourage people to start the day with a prayer. And, you know, I talk about the fact that, you know, we wake up in the morning and we always remember to prepare our bodies for the day. And we wouldn't think of going out of the house without brushing our teeth. We certainly wouldn't think of leaving the house without, you know, without getting dressed. We wouldn't go out in our pajamas. But how often do we remember to prepare our souls for the day that's in front of us? And how important it is to just orient yourself every morning. And it only requires just a minute, to take a minute and utter a sentence about what your hope is for this day, for just this single day. And remembering that every day sort of poses us with all kinds of opportunities.
Well, I guess that takes us to the next concept that I mentioned is if we do utter a sentence or do formulate an idea about prayer, what good does it do?
Well, I've been talking in my book, To Begin Again, I talk about prayer in the context of, in two contexts. One is in the wake of a very difficult time, whatever that may be. It can be a midlife crisis, it can be a divorce, it can be an illness, it can be any kind of loss, it can be losing one's job. But there's prayer that one can say in the wake of some experience that's crushing, that can give us the strength to endure and to move forward and to carry on and to remember that even though we may feel alone, that we're not alone, that there's a being there, that God is there to offer us comfort and to offer us strength and to remind us that we can triumph over whatever we're facing in our lives.
I'd like you to tell us about your personal experience in, as a teenager mm-hmm. and how that occurred and molded much of your adult life. But first, I want to tell our listeners, my guest this week is Rabbi Naomi Levy, the author of To Begin Again, The Journey Towards Comfort, Strength, and Faith in Difficult Times. Naomi, when you were a 15-year-old, your father was murdered in a senseless holdup that radically disrupted your life, and you overcame that terrible loss to some extent.
Well, I guess I should start by saying that I wanted to become a rabbi from the time that I was 3 years old, and everybody thought this was very funny, you know, because at the time girls weren't allowed to become rabbis, but it also was a pretty unusual thing for any child to want to become. And people would kind of laugh and giggle, and my parents would just sort of pat me on the head. Isn't that cute? No, we want to become a rabbi.
Do you remember what happened when you were three that pointed you in that direction?
Well, I certainly think that my father had a lot to do with it. He was a very learned Jew, and just a real person of faith, and he taught me. He took me to synagogue from a very, very early age, and I just was very entranced with God and with prayer and with the music of the prayers. And you know, my parents would try to pat me on the head, isn't that cute? Sort of the way I find myself doing to my son now. Because he desperately wants to become a pirate, and that's his life stream. But I grew up believing I was going to be a rabbi, and nothing anybody said to me, don't you know girls can't be rabbis, bothered me. And I think that's part of the miracle of childhood, is that kids are allowed to fantasize and dream great dreams, even if they're not necessarily reasonable dreams. But when I was 15, as you mentioned, my father was murdered in a mugging in Brooklyn, which is where I grew up. And it certainly, as you can imagine, something that devastated my life and really shattered our family. And there were so many losses that I experienced at that time. Obviously, I lost my father, who was truly the center of my world. But I also lost my mother because she wasn't the same person anymore. And, you know, we're coming upon the holiday season. All holidays died. As anybody who's ever experienced a loss in their family knows, the holidays are never the same when somebody that you love is not there sitting around the festive table. And the 15-year-old girl that I had been, you know, the one gossiping with her friends on the phone, with crushes on boys, you know, that girl died too. And something else died that I never imagined would die for me. God died too. I simply couldn't understand. I couldn't understand how the God that I loved, the God I believed in so deeply, would permit such an awful thing to happen to such a wonderful person. And I walked around feeling very angry for a long time, very, very betrayed. And, you know, that anger is a very common feeling. And as a rabbi, I certainly have seen it in many people, you know, who, you know, where were you, God? And that's how I felt. I felt very angry at God. And it was really over time, as I was sort of struggling to find my way back to life, that I started to see that maybe God wasn't Superman. And I had grown up thinking that God was Superman and that, you know, that we were all Lois Lane. And if we cried out loud enough, that sort of Superman would swoop down to protect good people and to punish bad people. And I started to see that maybe that's not who God was. And over time, I developed for myself a faith that I think is a lot stronger than it had ever been before. And a lot deeper than it had ever been before. And suddenly the dreams of a three-year-old girl that had also died when I was 15, they were resurrected before my eyes. And
what I'm interested in is how you develop that face, mm-hmm. and what that face is. What does it look like?
Well, it's a face that no longer sees God as the preventer of evil. I used to think that that's who God was, that God was a being who protects good people and punishes bad people. And, you know, I see that a lot. I see a lot of people walking around saying, God's watching over me, or God has blessed me, you know, God's protecting me. And they have no problem saying that, and at the same time, opening up the newspaper and reading about the millions of suffering people in this world, or the thousands of people dying, you know, all the time. And to me, there was a problem, and it's true that it only became a problem when it actually, when this world's injustice hit my own family. And I think it is a sad commentary about all of us that we only start asking that question, hey, maybe something's wrong with the way I'm believing. We only start asking that question when evil hits our own, when a tragedy strikes us. And we don't seem to have a problem with that kind of faith when it strikes somebody else, when we read about it or we see it on the news. But for me, suddenly, I started to see that maybe that's not God's job description. Maybe evil prevention isn't God's job description, because if it were, then all that any of us could ever say, if we open the newspaper any day of the week, is to say that God is doing an awful job.
Isn't God's job description defined by the individual, and that individual is directed by what their faith, religious or otherwise, may be?
Well, certainly, I think that our faith sort of directs how we think about God. But I personally started to see that there was something wrong with my faith, because the faith that I had, because it actually was contradictory to what I saw with my own eyes. And I started to see God as a being not who prevents evil, but who is with us in the times of evil, who is just as pained as we are by the tragedies in this world, and who is with us in times of difficulty to give us the strength to dream once more, to give us the power and the capacity to triumph in the face of evil, the will to combat evil. And then once I could make that leap that God wasn't the preventer of evil, then I could stop hating God and actually start listening to God. And for me, that was the progression. It sort of went from hatred to frustration to awe and to love.
What sort of resistance did you receive along the road when you really carried out your childhood desire to be a rabbi?
I have to say, very little. I mean, for the most part, it was more of an astonishment. You know, people would, you know, when I became a rabbi, I became a congregational rabbi to begin with, and I certainly was a curiosity. I made the front page of the Los Angeles Times, certainly. But it was more, it was, you know, people needed to come and see what this thing was. Well,
by congregational, you mean you have your own group of people who come to the synagogue?
I actually am not in the congregation presently, but for 7 years I had my own congregation. So I think initially people, you know, were, oh, God, is a woman rabbi. But it wasn't very long from when I went from being a woman rabbi to being the rabbi. And people have expectations, you know, oh, I thought she was going to be very masculine. Oh, look, she's not, you know, she's feminine. Or, you know, they worry that, you know, I'll be some kind of radical, angry feminist. And no, she's not that either, you know. So it's much more about allowing people to just come and have a look and then realize, oh, it's a rabbi, you know. She happens to be a woman. And it certainly does break down some of the stereotypes because people assume that a rabbi, when you say rabbi, it conjures up an image of an older man with a graying beard. You know, and here I was, a young woman, you know, a very young woman. I was 26 when I started in a congregation. But, you know, I think what happened was that very soon I just became their rabbi. And as a congregational rabbi, I think that what most moved me, what most inspired me, probably because of my own life experience, was watching people, my own congregants, face challenges in their lives, all kinds of challenges, and emerge from them not broken, not destroyed, not shattered, but actually stronger, wiser, kinder, more compassionate than they had been before. And I hope that, you know, really my congregants became my mentors. They became my teachers. And they really became the subject of the book that I was writing. I found myself writing about not just my own life and not just about sort of ancient pieces of wisdom, but about the journeys that they had made that had taught me about strength and about triumph in the face of all kinds of tragedies in life. Yeah.
Your stories about Sam and his childhood experiences are really, really wonderful.
Uh-huh.
I particularly enjoyed the one about the job interview where, where, why don't you tell us about that?
Want me to read it to you?
Yeah.
I can find it really, really fast. Okay. It's called A Failed Job Interview. Sam's grandmother, who owned a small hotel, needed to hire someone with a horse and cart to run errands for her business. When a man came to apply for the job, she asked him only this question: what would you do if you were riding somewhere and a heavy obstacle was blocking the road? The man replied, I would get out of the cart and move it out of my way. Sam's grandmother asked, but what if it was too heavy to move? The man responded, then I would try to steer the horse around it. Sam's grandmother said, what if there was no way around it? The man said, then I would have to turn back. Sam's grandmother said, thank you. Then she showed the man out. When she closed the door, she told Sam that the man didn't get the job. Sam was puzzled. The man had seemed nice enough, and he really needed the work. But his grandmother said, he didn't give the right answer. Sam asked, what did he say that was wrong? His grandmother explained, we don't live by ourselves in this world. If you're in trouble, you go for help. I really love that story.
Yeah, I do too. I have it marked and underlined in my book. Naomi, I'd like you to tell us what you're doing now, but first I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Radio Curious. Our guest this week is Rabbi Naomi Levy. I'm talking with her by phone from her home in Southern California. And her book is called To Begin Again, The Journey Toward Comfort, Strength, and Faith in Difficult Times. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Naomi, what are you up to these days now that you have not let your congregation go? That might not be the right term, mm-hmm. but are no longer with it in the same proximity.
Yeah. Well, I do a lot of teaching. I teach in various classes in Los Angeles, and for the past year, I've been doing a lot of traveling, lecturing all across the country on issues of faith and spirituality and healing. I've done some lecturing for the American Cancer Society on issues of healing. And I'm writing. I'm actually writing a book about prayer now. So it's interesting that your first questions were about prayer, because I'm writing a book about prayer right now.
I'd like to talk with you about it when it's done.
I'd like it to be done. One day at a time, yeah.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious. And
thank you.
Before we
I'd
close...
I'd love to read a prayer.
Yes, please. Before we close, do that. And then I want to ask you another question.
Oh, okay. With just about every chapter in my book, I close with a prayer, which sort of helps me to sort of get the message that I really need about what I've written. When I panic, God, teach me patience. When I fear, teach me faith. When I doubt myself, teach me confidence. When I despair, teach me hope. When I lose perspective, show me the way back to love, back to life, back to you. Amen.
I like that.
Thanks.
I like that.
You were saying?
I wanted to ask you to tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately.
I'm the kind of person, I have two kids, and at night I usually find myself reading at night, and I hate to be without a book. I'm always reading something. But a book that I read recently that really touched me was a book called The God of Small Things. And it's by a woman, I can't pronounce her first name, but the last name is Roy, R-O-Y. It's Arundhati Roy. And it's a book about a family growing up in India. And I just thought it was really compelling and beautifully written. And it really touched me.
Naomi Levy, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Well, thank you, Barry. It was really a pleasure to talk to you today.
In this archive edition of Radio Curious, we visited with Rabbi Naomi Levy, the author of To Begin Again, The Journey Toward Comfort, Strength, and Faith in Difficult Times. The book she recommends is The God of Small Things by Arundhati Roy. This program was recorded in December of 1999 and first broadcast at that time. At Radio Curious, we appreciate hearing from you about our programming. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. And the email is curious@pacific.net. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel.